this to do with memes? Well, the principle here applies to anything that is copied with variation and selection. We're so used to thinking in terms of biology, we think about genes this way. Darwin didn't, of course. He didn't know about genes. He talked mostly about animals and plants, but also about languages evolving and becoming extinct. But the principle of universal Darwinism is that any information that is varied and selected will produce design. And this is what Richard Dawkins was on about in his 1976 bestseller, The Selfish Gene. The information that is copied, he called the replicator. It selfishly copies. Not meaning it kind of sits around inside cells going, I want to get copied, but that it will get copied if it can, regardless of the consequences. It doesn't care about the consequences because it can't, because it's just information being copied. And he wanted to get away from everybody thinking all the time about genes, and so he said, is there another replicator out there on the planet? Yes, there is. Look around you. Here will do, in this room. All around us, still clumsily drifting about in its primeval soup of culture, is another replicator. Information that we copy from person to person by imitation, by language, by talking, by telling stories, by wearing clothes, by doing things. This is information copied with variation and selection. This is design process going on. He wanted a name for the new replicator. So he took the Greek word, mimeme, which means that which is imitated. Remember that, that's the core definition, that which is imitated, and abbreviated it to meme just because it sounds good and made a good meme, an effective spreading meme. So that's how the idea came about. It's important to stick with that definition. The whole science of memetics is much maligned, much misunderstood, much feared, but a lot of these problems can be avoided by remembering the definition. A meme is not equivalent to an idea. It's not an idea. It's not equivalent to anything else, really. Stick with the definition. It's that which is imitated, or information which is copied from person to person. So let's see some memes. You, sir, you've got those glasses hung around your neck in that particularly fetching way. I wonder whether you invented that idea for yourself or copied it from someone else. If you copied it from someone else, it's a meme. And what about, I can't see any interesting memes here. Right, everyone, who's got some interesting memes for me? Your earrings. Now, that's, I don't suppose you invented the idea of earrings. You probably went out and bought them. There are plenty more in the shops. That's something that's passed on from person to person. And all the stories that we're telling, well, of course, TED is a great meme fest, masses of memes. The way to think about memes, though, is to think, why do they spread? They're selfish information. They will get copied if they can. But some of them will be copied because they're good or true or useful or beautiful. Some of them will be copied even though they're not. Some, it's quite hard to tell why.
All I'm saying is that there are some things beyond the ken of mortal man that shouldn't be tampered with. We don't know everything, Andy. There's plenty going on right now in the Twilight Zone that we don't know anything about, and I think we ought to stay clear.
Awake. Shake dreams from your hair, my pretty child, my sweet one. Choose the day and choose the sign of your day, the day's divinity. First thing you see. A vast, radiant beach and cool, jeweled moon. Couples naked race down by its quiet side. And we laugh like soft, mad children, smug in the woolly cotton brains of infancy. The music and voices are all around us. Enter again the sweet forest. And enter the hot dream, come with us. Everything is broken up and dances. Indians scattered on dawn's highway bleeding, ghosts crowd the young child's fragile eggshell mind.
James Chatchett. As close as I can get it.
Making love to a vampire with a monkey on my knee. The pond shines dry like a lady's compact. Lilies leap like flat green hearts. White hearts squirting yellow pollen cocks. Ferns ran like cool speeds, fossils away from rocks. Bees echoed dark carbon hums that dashed in nothing. Gnats fucked my ears and nostrils, hit my brain like cones and numb to nothing. Wings stuck on liquid bones. Making love to a vampire with a monkey on my knee. The moon poured hollow down my empty leg. Splash, still and move. The wind beat down the willows and pricked the needle vine. The monkey moved to first shadow. Its soot tail curled in twos. Its lips smiled needles. Throat broke open, glistened in the dew. Red berries dangled like a dream of rubies too. Snot muscles ran down her ivory chin, a tooth within. A locket, a pin held faster than my love, my pocket deep within. And senses dangled a chain that clasped me to her then. The messenger spoke the wind that blows between our time. I sense you then in whispers spin, in flowing silver dust around the pointed pin, sent to nothing. God, please fuck my mind for good. Making love to a vampire with a monkey on my knee. White cloth bones pile up light thrown blades. Rags and skull, scoop soil cracks, drains, streams. Please take my hand and join me. Too soon its clutches gleam. Making love to a vampire with a monkey on my knee. Death be damned, life.
You may dispense with the pleasantries, Commander. I'm here to put you back on schedule.
He's like jocks, though.
I love jocks.
Rutherford Institute, here is John Whitehead.
Remember the candy you ate as a kid? Fizzies, wax lips, candy cigarettes, candy buttons, atomic fireballs, BB bats, bubblegum cigars, and lemon drops were all the rage at one time. But as more schools fall prey to zero-tolerance policies, the sweet concoctions of childhood are fast becoming bitter pills to swallow for today's young people. For example, one 6-year-old Colorado boy was treated to a sour experience after he was caught sharing a lemon drop with a fellow student. After calling an ambulance and the local fire department, school officials suspended the boy from school for a half a day under the school's zero-tolerance policy for illegal drugs. The point of law is our Fifth Amendment. The right to due process, especially in the form of common sense in the classroom, is one of your first liberties.
This has been a public service announcement from the Rutherford Institute. For a free book about your first liberties, visit www.rutherford.org or call toll-free 888-287-1787.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about
cutting and burning.
I'd probably talk about
cutting and burning.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school,
cutting and burning clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were a real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
Just listen and be supportive.
Probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Cutting and burning in my life made the pain that was going on in my mind real.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Carrie intentionally burned her arms with a curling iron.
Cutting and burning in my life made the pain that was going on in my mind real.
She got help and tries to help others.
Just listen and be supportive, but also don't enable the person to feel sorry for themselves and to keep going downhill. Try to stay away from that by encouraging them. How can you go forward? What do you need to do to make something positive out of this?
Who needs you to be supportive? From the Mennonite Churches and Faith and Values Media.
Picture of fear. When the road moves on,
You're listening to the Tears of the Gods sound collage here on WMFO in Medford. 91.5 on your FM dial. Yes, we are Tufts community. And particularly this evening, somewhat educational radio, as I am playing you excerpts from what I think is the scariest TED Talk I've ever heard, by Susan Blackmore, on memes and teams, technological memes, technological ideas that take on a life of their own. And through Darwin's theory of evolution and replication, may perhaps end up taking over the entire universe at some point. So, we began with John 5, Rob Zombie and Marilyn Manson's Telecaster-wielding guitar player, various points. And that was Dead Man's Dream from his Vertigo album, one of his several solo albums of his. And then we heard from one of our two featured artists this evening. Right after that, Wendy Carlos, an incantation from her Beauty and the Beast album. And then we heard from Mr. Jim Morrison and Ghost Song. I found that on The Doors soundtrack album. And then that crazy musical genius, Captain Beefheart, and his magic band, Vampire Suite. And I found that on a wonderful compilation, Songs in the Key of Z, The Curious Universe of Outsider Music. And we followed that with some heavy hitting hard rock, well, metallic rock from Slayer, Spirit in Black. And then some public service messages, including my mashup of the Mormons' Heart to Heart and the Mennonite media's cutting and burning public service messages. And then a song from our other featured band of the evening, Township. Well, actually, let me just be perfectly correct. We do have two featured artists, but more exactly, we have two featured albums for you. Wendy Carlos's Beauty and the Beast and Township's debut album. A Halloween-oriented debut album, if ever there was one. That was Saint Anthony. And backing me up right now is Brian Eno and Daniel Langlois, and a very ambient piece, Sirens, from both of them collaborating together. So we've got a little bit over half an hour to go, and we are going to start off our final set here with some more Wendy Carlos and a 12-minute piece called Just Imaginings. And we're going to begin that, like, right now, with some more Susan Blackmore. And we'll also be hearing from Vic Mizzy and Apollo 440 and Township here on WMFO in Medford. Thank you.
So think of it this way. Imagine a world full of brains and far more memes than can possibly find homes. The memes are all trying to get copied, trying in inverted commas, i.e. the shorthand is, that's the shorthand for, if they can get copied, they will. They're using you and me as they're propagating a copying machinery, and we are the meme machines. Now, why is this important? Why is this useful, or what does it tell us? It gives us a completely new view of human origins and what it means to be human. All conventional theories of cultural evolution, of the origin of humans and what makes us so different from other species, all other theories explaining the big brain and language and tool use and all these things that make us unique, are based upon genes. Language must have been useful for the genes. Tool use must have enhanced our survival, mating, and so on. It always comes back, as Richard Dawkins complained all that long time ago, it always comes back to genes. The point of memetics is to say, oh no, it doesn't. There are two replicators now on this planet. From the moment that our ancestors, perhaps 2.5 million years ago or so, began imitating, there was a new copying process. Copying with variation and selection. A new replicator was let loose. And it could never be, right from the start, it could never be that human beings who let loose this new creature could just copy the useful, beautiful, true things and not copy the other things. While their brains were having an advantage from being able to copy lighting fires, keeping fires going, new techniques of hunting, these kinds of things, inevitably they were also copying putting feathers in their hair or wearing strange clothes or painting their faces or whatever. So you get an arms race between the genes, which are trying to get the humans to have small economical brains and not waste their time copying all this stuff, and the memes themselves, like the sounds that people made and copied, in other words, what turned out to be language, competing to get the brains to get bigger and bigger. So the big brain on this theory is driven by the memes. This is why in the meme machine, I called it memetic drive. As the memes evolve, as they inevitably must, they drive a bigger brain that is better at copying the memes that that are doing the driving. This is why we've ended up with such peculiar brains, that we like religion and music and art. Language is a parasite that we've adapted to, not something that was there originally for our genes on this view. And like most parasites, it can begin dangerous, but then it co-evolves and adapts, and we end up with a symbiotic relationship with this new parasite. And so from our perspective, we don't realize that's how it began. So this is a view of what humans are. All other species on this planet are gene machines only. They don't imitate at all well, hardly at all. We alone are gene machines and meme machines as well. The memes took a gene machine and turned it into a meme machine. But that's not all. We have new kind of memes now. I've been wondering for a long time, since I've been thinking about memes a lot, is there a difference between the memes that we copy, the words we speak to each other, the gestures we copy, the human things, and all these technological things around us? I have always, until now, called them all memes. But I think, I do honestly think now we need a new word for technological memes. Let's call them techno memes or teams. Because the processes are getting different. We began, perhaps 5,000 years ago, with writing. We put the storage of memes out there on a clay tablet. But in order to get true teams and true team machines, you need to get the variation, the selection, and the copying all done outside of humans. And we're getting there. We're at this extraordinary point where we're nearly there, that there are machines like that. And indeed, in the short time I've already been at TED, I see we're even closer than I thought we were before. So, actually, now the teams are forcing our brains to become more like team machines. Our children are growing up very quickly, learning to read, learning to use machinery. We're going to have all kinds of implants, drugs that force us to stay awake all the time. We'll think we're choosing these things, but the teams are making us do it. So we're at this cusp now of having a third replicator on our planet. Now, what about what else is going on out there in the universe? Is there anyone else out there? People have been asking this question for a long time. We've been asking it here at TED already. In 1961, Frank Drake made his famous equation. But I think he concentrated on the wrong things. It's been very productive, that equation. He wanted to estimate N, the number of communicative civilizations out there in our galaxy. And he included in there the rate of star formation, the rate of planets, but crucially, intelligence. I think that's the wrong way to think about it. Intelligence appears all over the place in all kinds of guises. Human intelligence is only one kind of a thing. But what's really important is the replicators you have and the levels of replicators, one feeding on the one before. So I would suggest that we don't think intelligence, we think replicators. And on that basis, I've suggested a different kind of equation, a very simple equation. N, the same thing, the number of communicative civilizations out there we might expect in our galaxy. Just start with the number of planets there are in our galaxy, the fraction of those which get a first replicator, the fraction of those that get the second replicator, the fraction of those that get the third replicator. Because it's only the third replicator that's going to reach out, sending information, sending probes, getting out there and communicating with anywhere else. Okay, so if we take that equation, why haven't we heard from anybody out there? Because every step is dangerous. Getting a new replicator is dangerous. You can pull through. We have pulled through, but it's dangerous. Take the first step. As soon as life appeared on this earth, we may take the Gaian view. I loved Peter Ward's talk yesterday. It's not Gaian all the time. Actually, life forms produce things that kill themselves. Well, we did pull through on this planet. But then, a long time later, billions of years later, we got the second replicator, the Mies. That was dangerous, all right? Think of the big brain. How many mothers do we have here? You know all about big brains. They're dangerous to give birth to, agonizing to give birth to. My cat gave birth to four kittens purring all the time. Slightly different. But not only is it painful, it kills lots of babies, it kills lots of mothers, and it's very expensive to produce. The genes are forced into producing all this myelinate, all the fat to myelinate the brain. Do you know, sitting here, your brain is using about 20% of your body's energy output for 2% of your body weight. Oh, it's a really expensive organ to run. Why? Because it's producing the memes. Now, it could have killed us all.
It's just good, clean fun. Keeps them out of pool halls.
Branch left. What happened to the others? Could it be that this experiment in imitation, this experiment in a second replicator, is dangerous enough to kill people? Well, we did pull through, and we adapted. But now we're hitting, as I've just described, we're hitting the third replicator. And this is even more dangerous. Well, it's dangerous again. Why? Because the teams are selfish replicators and they don't care about us or our planet or anything else. They're just information. Why would they? They are using us to suck up the planet's resources to produce more computers and more of all these amazing things we're hearing about. oh, we created the internet for our own benefit. That's how it seems to us. Think teams spreading because they must. We are the old machines. Now, are we going to perform? What's going to happen? What does it mean to perform? Well, there are kind of two ways of perform. One that is obviously happening all around us now is that the teams turn us into team machines. With these implants, with the drugs, with us merging with the technology. And why would they do that? Because we are self-replicating. We have babies. We make new ones. And so it's convenient to figure that. The other option is viable, although it's closer. I heard this morning it's closer than I thought it was, where the team machines themselves will replicate themselves. That way, it wouldn't matter if the planet's climate was utterly destabilized and it was no longer possible for humans to live here, because those team machines, they wouldn't need, they're not squishy, wet, oxygen-breathing, warmth-requiring creatures. They could carry on without us. So those are the two possibilities. The second, I don't think we're that close. It's coming, but we're not there yet. The first, it's coming too. But the damage that is already being done to the planet is showing us how dangerous the third point is. That third danger point, getting the third replicator. And will we get through this third danger point like we got through the second and like we got through the first? Maybe we will. Maybe we won't. I have no idea.
That was an incredible talk.
Thank you. I scared myself.
The survivors of the nuclear fire called the war Judgment Day. They lived only to face a new nightmare. The war against the machines.
Time.
You've been listening to the Tears of the Gods Sound Collage here on WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Community, and especially this evening, Educational Radio, as I've played you an entire TED Talk by Susan Blackmore about memes and teams, technological memes, and the way ideas have a life of their own, and the way that ideas and machines may end up taking over not only our planet Earth, but the entire universe as well. Or we could all just die and go extinct, which is another possibility. So we began that set you just heard with Wendy Carlos and Just Imaginings, a 12-minute piece off of one of our two featured albums this evening, Beauty and the Beast. And that Just Imaginings was a bit of a pun on the just intonation that she was using throughout that album, Beauty and the Beast, as opposed to equally tempered tuning, which is, well, kind of a bit of musical fudging and not quite perfect, as I explained at the beginning of the show. And then we heard from Vic Mizzy and his theme from the Addams Family. And thanks to DJ Chris Major for turning me on to that through TV Guide's 50 all-time favorite TV themes. And then we heard from Apollo 440, The Machine in the Ghost. And Township followed that with Burnin' from their debut album, which was our other featured album of the evening. And then we finished off the music in that set with Belly and Witch. And then backing me up right now is Jack Marshall and his big jazz band. Well, at least maybe not a big jazz band, but certainly a jazz band version of the Munsters theme from Ultra Lounge Volume 13, TV Town. So it's time for me to leave and turn things over to our substitute DJ, Brandon, who's filling in for Savoir Faire and Songs from the Squid Pod. We'll be back again next week with another Halloween-based sound collage for you. And I'm going to be doing more of the typical things, songs about candy and devils and ghosts and goblins. Probably be a plastic sushi, although I'm not quite completely sure about that. So thanks so much for listening. Remember, if you're under the influence of anything, never even think about getting behind the wheel of a car and driving. And let's just finish off our transition over to Brandon with the Time Warp from the Rocky Horror Picture Show.